tripod, New Orleans at 300, returns with one more immigrant story. Today, producer Lane Kaplan-Levinson explores why upper-class Sicilians left Italy in the late 19th century for New Orleans, why it was frustrating to find the same problems once they got here, and what one family did about it.
This is Tripod, New Orleans at 300. I'm Lane Kaplan-Levinson. Is it cliche to tell a story about Italians that involves wine, extortion, and murder? Maybe. Is it about to happen? Definitely. Sorry, not sorry.
I know I'd go from rags to riches.
At the end of the 19th century, early 20th century, there was a large influx of Italian immigrants to the city. And many of them settled in the lower French Quarter, close to Esplanade Avenue.
Which is where I am with Rosanna Shepherd, a docent at the Beauregard Kais House. We're in the kitchen of the house, which was built in 1826 and has a long history. It was the home to a Confederate general, Beauregard, and an American author, Kais. But we're not here to talk about the French or the Civil War or literature. We're here to talk about some Sicilians, the Giaconas. And even though it's called the French Quarter,
they called this area Piccolo Palermo during this time, because it was almost just like a little Sicily. And they were obviously poor, and many of them didn't speak English, so they tended to stick together, and it was kind of a very close community.
The Giaconas came with the first migration of Italians to New Orleans. They were prosperous merchants who made their fortunes on Decatur Street in the 1870s and 80s. Pietro and his son Corrado ran a successful wine business back in Italy. Since they made a profit, they were bothered by the mafia, and the police for that matter, who all wanted a piece of the pie. So they left.
One of the reasons why they came to this city, or came to America in general, was to get away from all of the turmoil and all of the violence that was going on in Palermo at the time.
After a few years in New Orleans, Pietro and Corrado were ready to get back into the wine business. This led them to the Beauregard Kais House. It was cheap, since the neighborhood was falling apart at that time, and there was a nice, cool basement to store wine, which you don't see that much in New Orleans. You know, basements.
That was one of his wine cabinets. Wow. Which I planned to come in the dead of night one night and steal.
Just letting everyone know.
Yeah. Just you know, forewarn you that it will be missing at some point.
Rosanna loves to give tours and spend time at the Beauregard Kais House, not just because she loves its history, it's her history. She's the granddaughter of Corrado Giacona, and her own father grew up in the house until he was 15. So it may not be called the Beauregard Giacona House, but Rosanna keeps the family name alive and well inside those walls. And it's there that Pietro and Corrado opened Giacona and Company Wholesale Liquor Dealers. And they were very successful. A little too successful. You're listening to Tripod, New Orleans at 300. I'm Lane Kaplan-Levinson. From the end of the Civil War up until World War I, a lot of Sicilians came to Louisiana, and it happened fast. In 1882, there were fewer than 3,000 Italians in the state. 30 years later, there were 45,000. This spike happened with the second wave, which brought the lower class. Poor Sicilian peasants began arriving by the thousands in the late 1880s to harvest sugarcane.
These poor migrants coming to New Orleans bring with them some of the bad things of Sicily, and one of them is this criminal activity, particularly extortion, that the merchants were so happy to get away from.
This is Justin Nystrom, an assistant professor of history at Loyola University. He says this is why the wealthier immigrant group wasn't exactly welcoming to this incoming migrant class. Turns out, mobsters are immigrants too. And although these mobsters had no godfather or organized plan whatsoever, they did have a name, the Black Hand.
The Black Hand Society was a group of thugs who would send letters, threatening letters, extortion letters, stamped with a black hand, basically demanding that they pay them a percentage of their business profits, or they would meet either an untimely death or their business would be bombed.
Justin backs up Rosanna's memory of her family being extorted by the Black Hand. And he says in the Giacona case, guys were coming in from rural Louisiana for the company wine, but not paying for it. And then, on June 16th, 1908, around 9:30 p.m., four men show up to do just that.
And at some point, Pietro Giacona decides he has to make a stand against this, and he invites them in to have dinner and talk about business. Now, if you're at the Beauregard Kai's house, you're in this dining room, they're sitting around there, and they're all in their undershirts, and they start arguing. And these men want Corrado and Pietro to give them money. Well, Pietro goes and says, okay, I'll go get you some money finally. But instead, he returns with a brand new lever action rifle and opens fire on these guys.
Three of the men die on the spot. One escapes, but is found a few blocks away, lying beneath a nearby shed, pressing a dead chicken to his wound in attempt to stop the bleeding from a rifle shot through his lung.
His son grabs a pistol from a nearby table, and later he says, I was a madman. I don't even know if I emptied my pistol or not.
The Black Hand had arrived that evening unarmed, expecting their scare tactics alone would do the trick. Because seriously, who shoots up the mob? Pietro and Corrado were arrested the next day, but were eventually found innocent and celebrated as local heroes by the Sicilian community.
It was an important moment for this Black Hand, if you will, because after that, that kind of activity goes on for a little while, but it dies down. The conflict between the Giaconas and these criminals who came to their house is really a classic case of class conflict. It's an Americanization story that takes place in lots of cities in a lot of different contexts. But basically, the Giaconas were saying that there were certain things that were okay from the old country, but this sort of extortion was not one of them.
Even though that was said with guns, which is why the family lived in fear of retaliation for years following the incident, Rosanna felt this firsthand.
The men in the family refused to talk about it. So the information we got obviously was from the women in the family because they were the only ones talking, but would not let anyone else talk about it in front of them. And if we even dared to ask, whenever I would ask my father, he would just turn cold and look at me and say, "You will never speak of this again." There was still fear of repercussions and retaliation. So we were very protected as children because you never felt safe.
So the drama really did last generations. And so did the prejudice from non-Italians that were fueled by these rivalries.
When my mother was going to marry my father, my mother was French and Irish. Her family basically wanted to disown her because she was marrying a dirty Italian.
And then what did your father do professionally?
My father ran a bar.
It all comes full circle.
Even though he didn't actually produce wine, he served it. So that was his way of paying homage to his heritage.
Recently, Rosanna received proof that this rivalry is finally in the past.
The family of one of the victims of my grandfather was on a tour here recently. And they were told about me working here. And they just thought it was a great idea, or a great idea to meet me. And I don't think that they hold a grudge.
She says at this point, it's just a good story.
They had it coming. They had it coming. They had it coming.
Tripod is a production of WWNO New Orleans Public Radio in collaboration with the Historic New Orleans Collection and the University of New Orleans Midlow Center for New Orleans Studies. Special thanks to Evan Christopher for the opening theme music. I'm Lane Kaplan-Levinson, and I'll tripod you later.
Cicero. Lipschitz.